Welcome to Opus Private Clients Wealth Style Podcast. All of the material discussed on our podcasts have specific themes, and that's to move your wealth and lifestyle forward, increase your purpose, and provide you with clarity and confidence. Opus's mantra is always forward. We have found that regardless of one's wealth, moving your lifestyle forward is the number one priority for our clients. On our podcasts, we'll share our rich 35 years of experience in designing strategies, share clients' experiences, and introduce resources that have positively impacted our clients. We trust that you will enjoy our direct, transparent, and realistic approach to positively impacting the quality of you and your family's lives. Now, on to the show.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Opus Wealth Style Podcast. I'm Ivan Watanabe, joined by my partner, Evan Wall. Evan, good morning. How you doing?
I am rejuvenated and excited today.
I love it. That's good. I like to hear that. We're really excited today to have on a guest of ours, a friend of mine and my contractor, Maria Lisa Ziwachenko. Now, I'm just going to call you what my daughter calls you, Miss ML. I think that's affectionately calls you Miss ML, which is a hell of a lot easier. So we're going to stick with that. But ML, how are you today?
Hi, thank you for having me. ML works just fine.
Perfect. ML, we're excited to kind of have you join the podcast today because all of our clients and friends and people in our community are always hearing nightmare stories about contractors, and it's really difficult to find a good one where you feel like you can trust them and what are the things we don't know, and then it could potentially like cause people to not start a project because they're worried about it getting finished. I mean, we've all heard just like horrendous stories. So what I thought we would do today is just kind of share with us best practices of how to work with a contractor and those sorts of things. And we'll kind of walk through that. But before we kick it off, if you can just tell us a little bit about you, tell us a little bit about your business, where you're located, the name, you know, help us out.
I am the owner and operator of Cyrus Contracting. We have been in business since 2009. My background comes from years of working in the commercial sector for numerous general contractors in New York City. Prior to that, I was in the Navy in the construction battalion. I also studied building construction and construction management in college. So I've been doing this and I've been around this for 30 years now, which is, wow, mind-blowing. My company, Cyrus, specializes in interior residential renovations. So that includes kitchens, bathrooms, basements, and additions. What I like to say differentiates us is that I've developed this newer model. And it's not so much a new model, but it's not very well practiced in our area. And it's kind of the design build model. So that means that the contractor is the point person, the head person running the project. Traditionally, you would have an architect, a homeowner would go to an architect and say, hey, we're thinking about renovating our basement and we're going to need a set of plans and we're going to need a person to deal with not only the construction part of the project, but the building department side of the project and the management of all of the subcontractors and the management of the architect. The architect would then go draw a set of plans and then come back to you with his initial set of plans and you would okay them. And then he would present you 3 to 5 contractors who would then bid on the set of plans and then send you pricing. That is a lengthy process. And then you could get prices that are extremely different. And you have to go through each price and determine what is included in each price. Did one contractor leave something out? Did another one add something that you hadn't anticipated? And then what if they come back and all of them are way over budget? Then you have to go back to the drawing board. Your architect has to redraw the plans and then they go back out to the contractors. So it's a very lengthy process. So we've kind of been able to streamline it and say, listen, the contractor is going to come in from the beginning and control the whole process. So the architect falls under the umbrella of the contractor. The contractor then works with a budget to control what the architect draws. And then it's a lot smoother and less timely. I found great success in that, but there is a huge element of trust that comes with that, because you're trusting that your contractor is going to get the most out of your budget. Speaking to that, you know, there are the general ways that you could kind of vet your contractor. Number one, they should always have workers' comp insurance, general liability insurance. They should always have a license for the municipality that they're working in. In my case, I have a Westchester County license, a Putnam County license, and a New York City license. So you could vet those things by saying, can you present me with your license and insurance? You could also ask to see a previous project. You could ask to speak to former clients. So that's a good way to get a sense of who you're going to be spending a significant amount of time with. I mean, I really get to know my clients for better and for worse. I see a lot of sides of people that they don't normally show to the outside world, because I'm in their house and I'm in their lives for a significant amount of time.
When we were, I think what attracted Joanne and I to sort of you and your company was that holistic aspect, right? I mean, part of what we were looking for, and we looked at other contractors as well, and you're right. The prices are wildly different when they're giving you quotes and you have no idea. And most of us are like, I'll just choose the middle one, but that's a terrible sort of, I mean, that's not the way we went, by the way, but I think that's an approach that some people may take. You have no idea what you're looking for. You have no idea what's included, what's not included, and all of the things that you don't know that you don't know. And I think that's really scary. And so for us, we talked to a bunch of our neighbors. We've looked at the work. The website was extremely helpful. So any contractors that are out there that don't have a website that highlight your projects, that's wild to me. I don't understand how you get business without sharing some of the work that you've already done. So I think that makes a ton of sense. But looking at the licenses and making sure that everything there is up to code makes a ton of sense.
Just to speak to that really quickly, you know, there are different projects and different contractors that suit each project. If, say, you were going to do like a closet renovation, I wouldn't be a good fit for that. You could possibly use a handyman or kind of a guy with a truck who runs his own business and does the work himself, which is a totally different business model than I have. And he may not be a good business person because he's good with tools and he's good with building. So he might not have a website, but he might come highly recommended.
Yep.
There's different contractors for different projects.
Definitely.
ML, what do you think underlies the reason that so many people have this notion that contractors can either be unreliable or not the best communicator, whatever adjectives you want to put there? And kind of a second question to that is, what are best practices? What can we look for when interviewing contractors or looking for contractors that's going to make it a good fit for the individual?
I think part of that lies in what I was just talking about, kind of the guy with the truck. Typically, people who are skilled in construction may not have the business skills to put forth and present themselves well. You know, I think that maybe unreliability that a lot of people assume contractors are, you know, shady and they're trying to rip you off, I think that might come from the person who's maybe lacking business skills, but has good construction skills and they're a one-man operation. So when you have multiple people running a project, that disperses the responsibility and kind of upholds people to what they say they're going to do. Again, you know, there's different projects for different contractors. So if you're doing a small project that just takes a couple of days, that guy with a truck might be the solution. Mm-hmm. If you're doing a huge addition to your home, I would not recommend going that route. Remind me what the second part to your question was.
What are the best practices of looking for the right fit to avoid something like that, so you don't fall into this frustration trap?
Even government work now is going away from just awarding the project to the lowest bidder. I think that you have to throw out that notion of, I'm going to go with the cheapest person. When you interview contractors, you should choose somebody that you feel comfortable with, somebody that you feel like there's a level of trust kind of right off the bat. It really can't be about price. I mean, you get what you pay for. So if you're going off the lowest price, then you can assume that there's going to be something kind of lacking in a general sense. Sometimes it just happens to be that the prices are closer together, or if you really love the cheapest contractor, you feel like you can trust them. I'm not saying don't go that way, but I feel like it shouldn't just be about price.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot to be said about the trust, which is just intuitive, right? Who's to know,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely intuitive.
Speak to someone for 20 minutes and you just got to take a guess, but you know, do your best.
Absolutely. It's funny because when we were interviewing other contractors, we're having conversations and we're not design people. Like Joanna's in medicine, I'm in finance. You know, we're not like super savvy design people. I don't have a great eye for style when it comes to that sort of thing. So we need to run, you know, somebody could do the project potentially and like put walls up and put up X, Y, and Z, but that's not what we were looking for, right? We were looking for somebody that we could bounce ideas off of and give us suggestions. Hey, knobs are not going to work there, right? You know, you knobs are not going to work there. You should have pulls. Okay, here's why. We think this color goes really well with that color. You guys should consider doing this. You probably haven't thought about this. So I think that back and forth and actual like design work was extremely valuable for us, not just putting up whoever can bid out the cheapest walls and put, you know, up sheetrock, right? So that was really important to us when we were doing, you know, a space as large as our basement. It's funny, I sent a friend of mine a recent video of the project because he's into that sort of stuff. And he's like, oh, nice. Did you hire another designer to do it? Or did you guys do it yourself? I go, no. Like our contractor is our design person. You know, we didn't have to go to somebody else because we knew we were going to, if we found a contractor that simply would put up the walls, we'd have to go hire another designer to come in and do that same work. It was helpful for us to be able to find somebody that did everything for us, for sure.
ML, what do you look for?
Oh, I could speak to this question for
quite
a long time.
Just pretend Yvonne's not here.
Yeah, exactly.
Yvonne is fabulous, by the way. Pedro the other day said to me in his broken English, all projects should be like this one.
Nice.
So I think the first thing that is kind of big, huge red flag is when people call me and right off the bat, they're speaking to, well, how much is it going to cost me? Well, I only have X amount of dollars for this. It's impossible for me to judge what your project is going to cost from a phone call or even from looking at a set of plans. I don't know. I have to meet you. I have to know your goals. I have to know what we're working with. How far away is the home away from the street? How easy is it to get a dumpster there? All of those variables are impossible for me to shoot a number off the top of my head. Couldn't even give it a range at that point. So that's a huge red flag when they're talking about cost and cost only right off the bat. Huge red flag for me. And then secondly, I think there's a level of expectation. So I have to be sure that I present people well with the expectations of how things are going to work. I have people who think, well, if your tile guy is charging, how much is the tile guy charging? If he's charging $2,000, then I'm only paying $2,000. So there is a level of markup that I have to put on every subcontractor and typically materials, because that's how my company makes money. So a lot of people don't understand that. And they think that, well, if you're just managing them, well, I could pay them direct, or I only expect to pay what they're charging. And that's not the case as well. Additionally, there are different types of construction contracts. There is a cost plus contract, which has like a set markup so that you can expect to pay 1.x on each receipt that comes into the project. There's a lump sum contract, which is most often used. The lump sum contract is the contractor presents the price and then the contractor kind of owns that price. So if there's a change, so say the painter has changed his labor rate, and when you bid the project and when you go to perform the project, the painter's cost has gone up X amount of dollars. The general contractor owns that at that point because the lump sum bid dictates that I own it. So I think it's important to know what type of contract you're getting into prior to starting the project, and to understand that there are hard costs and soft costs, and maybe not all of it is transparent, but you should understand it still nonetheless. You know, another thing, and I had sent Yvonne kind of this list that I'm working on with Northern Westchester Connect magazine, because they've been asking me the same questions, and we're going to do an article about it. And it's kind of a list of what to expect from your contractor. You know, some of the things on the list are expect that we're going to take before and after pictures. And if you have a problem with your pictures being on social media, please let us know and we'll withhold them. Expect that communication will flow through email and text messages. Who do you want to be on that text group? Expect that if there's a change, we'll present a price prior to, and expect that it's approved or denied prior to that work starting. Expect that you should probably have like a 10% reserve budget, because things do often change. I always try to tell people that, with the caveat that 99% of those changes are what the homeowner wants. It's not necessarily like stuff that we uncover. And that's just because as the project evolves, different ideas pop up. You know, expect that the project manager or lead isn't there throughout the 8-hour day, but checks in, things like that. So I hope that's kind of it going forward. I will present that list to my potential clients, but I hope that kind of sets more expectations realistically.
Yeah. I think one of the things that Joanna and I tried to do really well with the people that built our home, our builders, and with you and sort of everybody that we work with, is try to get back answers fast. I'm not going to be the reason why the project is taking longer than expected, right? Like if it takes longer because somebody's on vacation or whatever, that's fine, but it won't be because of us, right? And I, you know, try to give payment as quick as possible. Like it just never, we never wanted to feel like we were the reason why something is taking longer. And so I know our builder certainly appreciated that, because it kind of helped move things along faster. Again, if they take time, I totally get it, but it won't be on our accord when we're sort of, you know, working with somebody like that. So,
and I appreciate that as well. Yeah. Tremendously. I think that, again, when we have those design meetings prior to the project starting, and I see that someone has a hard time making decisions, and I've recently come off a project where I kind of insisted that we have all the material on the site prior to starting, because I could see that she was headed down this spiral of, I need to go to 20 houses and see what other people have. I need to research. And that will absolutely hold up a project. It ended up that we took 9 months to get to the starting point, because I had to insist, you need to have everything here, because I see that you struggle. No matter how many times we sit down and discuss the design, she was still struggling. She, as a matter of fact, went through 22 different pendant lights at her kitchen island. 22. So
that sounds like some red flags to me.
That's wild.
That was, and she probably had like, let's say an average of 2 for every visit. That was an additional 10 visits for me to review pendant lights.
That's wild.
So
that's wild.
Yeah. I kind of had to see, I have to get to know people and see how they operate, but it ended up okay because I did insist that she get everything there prior. And, you know, unfortunately, some things were just taking so long because of COVID. For instance, plumbing fixtures that were black finish, or, you know, now the trend is toward this kind of gold or brass finish. They were taking so long just because these companies couldn't make them fast enough. So unfortunately, that held up some of the project's progress. But, you know, that's really out of anyone's control. And I think that was certainly an understandable instance. But for the most part, I love when people are able to make decisions very quickly. It makes my job run so much smoother. And if it's not the case, I do understand, but then we have to work around it a little bit.
Yeah. Or beyond sort of delays in decision-making or sort of dragging feet, are there any mistakes that people like really make when working with you, either not taking your advice on like large things, or is there like some decisions that are short-sighted that end up like kind of biting them in the butt later on? What are the things that you've seen constant mistake or big mistake that people could or can make?
I have an example of a tremendous mistake. And actually, they just came back to me recently and said, "You're right. You're right."
Did that feel good?
And you know, a lot of crazy things happened during COVID, but you know, I had this couple who bought a house in Bedford sight unseen, just because during COVID, finding a house in Westchester County was a total crapshoot. There was so many bids that people just felt like, I need to just get out of the city. I'm going to bid on whatever I see.
I can't even buy a sandwich sight unseen. Like, what are we talking about? I love, anyway, sorry.
It was desperate times.
Yeah,
desperate
for sure. Times. For sure.
So the first time I met them, they were actually laying eyes on their house for the first time. And they knew just from the pictures that there were a significant amount of renovations to make. So I worked with them on this design build project. And during the project, there were some HVAC, kind of a rework that we had to do. And I brought in, they were very knowledgeable and they had a lot of great questions. So what I did was arrange for multiple meetings with three different HVAC contractors that I used. All of them pretty much had the same thing to say, the same system to recommend, and they were roughly the same cost. So I really left it up to them as to who they wanted to use. In the meantime, they went to kind of one of these bigger plumbing and HVAC contractors in our area, and the salesperson sold them on a system that had a lot of tax rebates. And when they presented it to me, I said, that sounds too good to be true. I went back to my HVAC guys and they said, that's really for a commercial application, not a residential. They're going to get stuck because they might not have the electrical capacity to feed these units. And that's exactly what happened. They decided to go with this salesperson who sold them way more than they bargained for. So at the end of the day, they had this new system that couldn't heat and cool because it didn't have the proper electrical component. They had to go back to the company and insist that they provide an electrical upgrade. Now, an electrical upgrade would cost about $30,000. This company was not willing to do that. So they had to take them to court and they got a portion of it. At the end of the day, they're going to spend more than $30,000 to get this electrical upgrade to feed this system that was not recommended by my three subcontractors.
Wow.
So
take your advice.
It's not just about taking my advice. It's if three people are telling you one thing and one person is saying the opposite, I mean, if it's too good to be true, it probably is. It probably is.
ML, you mentioned earlier the two contract options of lump sum and was it cost plus? Is one always better than the other? It depends on the situation. How do you think about that? Or how should clients think about that?
Like I said, lump sum is more widely used. Cost plus can be, it's beneficial to the contractor, absolutely, because there's no risk involved. It's basically like I'm taking all my receipts and I'm telling you you're paying 21% on top of those receipts and I'm collecting money.
So no incentive to keep costs down or anything
there's
like that?
No incentive to keep costs down. So it's just not often used. If someone really wants to see all of the intricacies and costs of the project, that might be for them. In my experience, I've done it once and it was because the person I was working for was a designer and she wanted to control more than a typical client. It did not benefit her. It did not benefit her other than seeing all of the costs straightforward. She would have been better off using a lump sum contract.
Yeah, it seems less in partnership than sort of that type of relationship. It works for us. One of the things that, you know, we're constantly thinking about, especially as what we do for a profession, is sort of like, how do we make the changes in the projects sort of have the best ROI for our investment in this house, right? So I know you had shared with us some things that you've seen as particular trends, but if you can share with the listening audience some things that you see, at least in the Westchester area, but or you know, wherever else, but what are the best ways or spends that you think people can make on their homes?
Yeah, so I shared with you this chart that I follow yearly, and it shows where you put the money in your house that produces the best return. And year after year, it's always stone veneer, which we actually did on your house, Stephen, and it looks great. And I think that that speaks to kind of the curb appeal aspect. So when you go to sell your house, people love that curb appeal. And when they see stone, it's like a huge bonus. Additionally, always topping the list is kitchen and bathroom work. Of course, kitchens and bathrooms sell a home just because people don't want to go through the headache of remodeling those prior to moving in. So an updated kitchen with, you know, nice quartz countertops, that absolutely will sell a home. Just to speak to that a little bit, some people get very creative and do very different things. You know, a person might like purple cabinets, but when they go to sell their home, that might not benefit them. So you kind of have to weigh what is going to suit me and what is going to suit a future buyer. What am I going to get? How can I get the most out of this? Another thing that I encourage people to think about is I often get a lot of calls about repainting or resurfacing cabinets, and I absolutely think it is not worth it. So if you have cabinets that are 20 years old, even if they're of great quality, to refinish them correctly is very expensive. So the way cabinets are finished, they're produced in a plant, they get a high heat spray finish. So to replicate that in an existing kitchen is very difficult. We use highly toxic chemicals. We have to ventilate while we're doing it. So it ends up being an expensive process. And because the cabinet industry is so flooded, the cost of cabinets has actually come down significantly. So I always encourage people to scrap the idea of trying to do a refresh, because in the end, I think you will get so much better of a product and so much better return on your investment if you just maybe hold off a couple of years and save enough to redo the whole kitchen. And, you know, again, there are bells and whistles that have been developed in the past 20 years, like soft close hinges, soft close drawers. That's a really nice luxury that you're not going to get if you just do a quick refresh, like doing paint the cabinets, do a new countertop and backsplash. You're just not going to get a big enough return on that. So I always encourage people to think, like, it's not just about like, how can I do this quick and easy? It's about getting the best bang for your buck.
That's great. One of the things that we've constantly talked about, and we've talked about this, right, is, and don't worry, town of Lewisboro, we submitted permits. Okay. So don't come after me. Whether or not work should be done with or without a permit, and do contractors take jobs where that somebody's not submitting a permit, like kind of walk us through the benefits or maybe the downsides of doing it sort of the proper way. Again, we're not recommending either one for everybody out there listening. Do it the right way. But that is a conversation that happens often.
It happens every day. I always try to prep people with the premise that it is getting a permit is meant to protect you as the consumer and me as the contractor. So it's a level of protection. It means that you got the work done in a way that's up to code, and I, as the contractor, got paid for said work. It's, you know, a level of protection that everyone needs or should feel comfortable with. That being said, the hard and fast rule used to be that if you were putting a sink where a sink was, you didn't need a permit. If you're replacing a light where a light exists, you don't need a permit. I have found that these towns have gotten maybe a little bit greedy and then have viewed permits as a source of income. So if you call and ask, hey, town of Lewisboro, do I need a permit to gut a bathroom and replace it? with every plumbing fixture is in the same location, they will say yes. I'd say maybe 9 out of 10 times they'll say yes. But it really, if you're putting like for like, in my opinion, it doesn't really require a permit. If you're adding a bathroom, if you're adding a bedroom, if you're adding any kind of square footage, if you're finishing any kind of square footage, new plumbing, new electrical, you should pursue a permit. What can happen if you don't? So say for your basement, Yvonne, we didn't pull a permit. We did all this work. What can happen is that when you go to sell the house, and your potential buyer raises a red flag and says, hey, you know, we checked with the town of Lewisboro and it says that your basement is unfinished, but in fact, it's finished. The town can then require you to get a permit and get approved. It's called a legalization process. And that is such a pain in the butt. You're going to lose your potential buyer. So you don't want to go that route. You don't want to have to go back and legalize. If you go legalize, you have to then hire an architect. You have to then rehire a plumber, an electrician, HVAC. They have to, and they may have to take some walls down to make sure that everything was done according to code. So best to always get a permit. And if there's a question, maybe just ask the local municipality or me, and I can give my best opinion.
Appreciate it. Now, ML, where can the listening audience sort of find out more about you, find out more about the company, find out other good contractors? Where would you recommend that happen?
I would suggest going to the Westchester County Consumer Protection Department, and they hold all of the licensees or home improvement contractors in Westchester County. So I think that's a good place to start. Facebook has been amazing. So there are a lot of mom pages, a lot of local pages. So if you go on to one of those local pages and say, who's had a good experience with renovating a kitchen, that feedback is priceless because it's your neighbors giving you their best recommendations. My information is best found on my website, and that's cyruscontracting.com. I actually won the Builders Award for Westchester Magazine in 2023. So there's a bunch of
congrats.
Articles. Thank you. Cool.
I think the project was my neighbor's project.
That was your neighbor's project. Yeah. So there's a bunch of media about that as well, which was super exciting. And I'm also applying for 2024. Yes. So cyruscontracting.com. And to find a good builder, I would say tap Facebook or your local licensee issuing department.
Awesome. ML, you know, we really appreciate you being on with us today and sharing a ton of information. I know the listening audience sort of will definitely find it valuable. Is there one thing you want to make sure that everybody kind of has as a takeaway as we wrap this up?
I am just going to reiterate what I said earlier, and that is to not really go on price, but go on your gut when choosing a contractor. Go on who you feel comfortable with and who you feel like you have a level of trust with.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you so much again for joining us today and being a great source of wisdom. And thank you to the listening audience for tuning in. Make sure to click subscribe below to be notified when we have new episodes coming out.
Thank you for listening to the Wealth Style Podcast. Click the subscribe button below to be notified when new episodes become available.
This podcast is intended for general public use and for informational purposes only. Guest speakers and their firms are not affiliated with or endorsed by PAS, Guardian, or Opus Private Client, and opinions stated are their own. Guardian and its subsidiaries do not endorse or have any direct or indirect responsibility with respect to the information provided. Yvonne Watanabe and Evan Wohl are registered representatives and financial advisors of Park Avenue Securities, LLC, PAS. Securities products and advisory services offered through PAS member FINRA SIPC. Financial representatives of the Guardian Life Insurance Company of America, Guardian, New York, New York. PAS is a wholly owned subsidiary of Guardian. Opus Private Client, LLC is not an affiliate or subsidiary of PAS or Guardian. Opus Private Client, LLC is not registered in any state or with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission as a registered investment advisor. Yvonne's California insurance license number 0H44206. Evans, California insurance license number 0H04936. Compliance approval 2023-167332 expires January 2026.